Perek Vav Pasuk Yedalet over here, and it says the following. So we already talked about what happened with the Plishtim. The people of Beis Shemesh were all sitting around, and they were reaping, they were doing something, seemingly in the middle of the winter, which is a little bit crazy, meaning Kislev itself. It says in Pasuk Yedalet, Agoa Baal Stesh Yoshua Beis Hashimshi. The wagon came to the field of Yoshua of Beit Shemesh, V'tamud Shem, and it stood there. V'sham Evan Gedola, there was a large stone there. V'yavaku was Atzei Agoa, and they split the boards of the wagon itself, as a paros and the cows itself. Halu Ola Hashem, and they brought it as an Ola to a Kaddish Baruch Hu itself. Now, this is a Kasha, but it's not that big of a Kasha. How could they bring a Korban outside of the Beis Hamikdash itself? And the answer is, whenever the Arun Kodesh was not with the rest of the Mishkan, you were allowed to bring bamos. Bamos means outside types of korbanos, where you can bring outside of Eretz Yisrael wherever you want to do it. You can't do it when the Mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash is standing, but now because the Mishkan was destroyed and the Aron Kodesh was not with it, they were allowed to make bamos. They made their first Mizbeach outside in Beis Shemesh itself. That's what they're doing over here. And that was mutter, you were allowed to do it. But there are problems with that. Normal korbanos, if you want to bring a korban ola, you cannot bring a female. Olas have to be male animals. And this was a para. These were two paras. That's female animals. Why was that allowed? The answer is, doesn't apply to Obama. Number two, there were no Kohanim here. These were all people from Shevi Yehuda, and yet they still brought the Korban, and the answer is, it's Obama. By Obama, you don't need Kohanim. You could have anybody doing it. There wasn't a problem whatsoever, so it was perfectly fine. Others say that it was the Plishtim that brought the Korbanos. That was the Radak. It says the Plishtim did it, and that was perfectly fine. Okay, Balavim Horidu was Aron Hashem. The Levium brought the Aron of Hashem. That's the Argaz Asherito, as well as the treasure box that was with it. Remember, they had the golden hemorrhoids and the golden rats inside there, right? And they brought it over. Asherito, they put it by the large stone. So the men of Beis Shemesh, they brought offerings and they brought other korbanos on that day to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and it was all happy. Now, until now, the Aron was really carried by the Kohanim. But that's not a chiyuv, because in the Midbar, there was without a question, they brought it with the Levium. The Levium were the ones that carried it. There weren't enough Kohanim to carry it. As time went on, the preference is Kohanim, but Levium can carry it as well. The five officers of the Plishim, they saw what happened, saw the Arum being returned, they saw the Jews' happiness, and they went back to Ekron. So it seems they went right back side. Chazal say, and it's an obvious one over here, the Me'amalois doesn't say it, it was best this way, because they shouldn't see the desecration that's going to happen in Beis Shemesh right now. They assumed everything was good with the Jews, there were no problems whatsoever, but now a horribly unfortunate incident happens. There were five golden, as we said before, hemorrhoids. We tried describing them last time. Each one represented one of the cities of the Plishtim. As well as the five golden mice, they represented those five lords that were there as well. They stand today. They put everything until right by the stone, which still stands today in the area of Beit Shemesh. I don't know if it still stands today in Beit Shemesh, but until the days of when this was. Well, no, the gold was eventually brought with the Aron, but meaning the stone stands today, but not the golden stuff right over there. Right, but everybody feared themselves. The Abarbanel says that there were hundreds of these things, not just five. It wasn't just five golden hemorrhoids and five golden mice. It was five golden hemorrhoids and five golden rats that were brought by every city and every town and every one of the Plishtim who could afford it, so that they would give a gift over to the Mishkan itself. Everybody wanted to bring something. Everybody wanted to do something for them, and that's that. So that was the idea behind it. Now, Vayachba Anshei Beis Shemesh. The Anshei Beis Shemesh were destroyed. Ki rov Aron Hashem, because they looked at the Aron of Hashem. Vayachba am shivimish chamishim elafish. And they were killed among them 70 men and then 50,000 men. 70 people and then 50,000 people. Vayisablu am ki kasham ba'am akadagola. And they were all mourning. Because he said, this is the saddest thing in the world. We just lost that many people.
Yeah, 50,000, that's one of those 50, days. 50,000,
no, it was a huge amount of people. Now, right over here, what did they do? It says because they saw the Aron of Hashem. But what does that mean? So what? They looked at the Aron of Hashem. What's the problem over here? So number one, the first answer is that they saw the Aron HaKodesh as if in a disrespectful fashion. Since the Aron HaKodesh normally is covered, they should have immediately covered up the Aron HaKodesh. The same way by Noach, Shem Cham and Yafes, Cham was punished for walking and not ignoring the nakedness of his father. Shem and Yafes went backward in order to cover up their father so they wouldn't see his nakedness. Chum didn't care whatsoever. So it's over here. They should have immediately brought a blanket, covered the Aron Kodesh. Instead, they stared at the Aron Kodesh, stared at the Kruvim, said, we're never going to get a chance to see this. This is awesome. I wish we could see it more often. That was a problem. That was a major, major issue to be able to see something like that.
There are different explanations for this, though, because the weird word is 70 people, 50,000
people. Hold on. I'm going to get to that in a second. So that's number one. Number two, right? It seems like they were happy about what was happening. It seems that they rejoiced. They were happy when they saw the ark. Now, one thing to be able to rejoice when you see the ark itself, it's another thing to get a little bit too much into your happiness. They started doing dances which were inappropriate in front of the Aron Kodesh. And once they started doing those types of dances, the men and the women were dancing, whatever, that became something which is inappropriate, and that was a problem when it was over there. They, number three, there were other people that didn't dance. They were casually, like, still reaping their fields. And they were like, hey, look, the Aron came back. That's awesome. Man, it's been a long time, as they were reaping. And that's the third sin, that how could they just sit there and watch the Aron come back and not realize that there's something there? It's unbelievable that they did that. Number four, and a weird one, is that they actually opened up the Aron Kodesh and looked inside. They saw the Luchos, and that was usher completely. You couldn't open up the Aron Kodesh. They couldn't touch it. But they opened it up, and they saw inside, and that was a major, major problem. Now, there are other opinions that are brought out. There in Sota, Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, it says that the people of Beit Shemesh addressed the Aron Kodesh and said, oh, yeah? What made you so angry that you had to leave, and what made you so happy that you felt like you could come back? They treated it as if, anthropomorphically, it could answer them back and give them what they were doing. That was a problem in and of itself. And then the Bereishis Rabba, which is the simple one, what, 6 months, 7 months, the Aron Kodesh is gone, and they didn't even try to get it back. Why didn't you try to get it back? Where were you the whole
time?
Lost
the war.
Why didn't do anything? Granted, fine, but it's the Aron Kodesh. You should have at least tried. You should have attempted to go grab it, especially if you knew that it was wrecking havoc throughout
the
police.
Leadership of the people.
Yes, it was. It was 100%, and that's why.
But you lost it. Maybe that's a sign that you're not worthy of it.
Granted, that doesn't mean you can't try to get it back. Yeah, right there, you have to do everything you can to try
realistic.
To get it back.
You just lost the major war. You're probably...
So you plan it. Plan something. Do something.
But it,
your
takes a while
first
to plan.
Plan.
This is a few months.
But, yeah, agreed. So at least have a plan in place. There wasn't a plan in place. Nothing was there. Nothing was set. It seemed like they were going there. Now, where the 70 and the 50,000 people, obviously it's worded weirdly. It should be 50,000 and 70, not 70 and then 50,000. So Chazal say, the Medrash says, it was 70 members of Sanhedrin, the leaders of the people, who were equal to 50,000 people. So it wasn't actually 50,000 people that died. It was 70 people who were equal to 50,000 itself.
Let's say
that's
it was literally the Sanhedrin.
It
says Kishivim Sanhedrin, meaning they were such a lofty level. They were like 70 members of Sanhedrin.
That could very well be. Right, but very chush of people. The Gemara says, no, it was, there's another way of looking at it. There were 50,000 people of the people themselves, 70 of the Sanhedrin itself, and then the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel says there were only 70 Jews that died, but there were 50,000 Plishtim that died with the hemorrhoids and everything that they had when the Aron was by them. So it was 50,000, 70, but 50,000 Plishtim, 70 of the Jews ended up dying.
It's still
Shemesh.
A weird way to say
yeah, it is a weird way of wording
it,
especially
the nation, 70
now.
People, oh, 50,000 people, of what?
It doesn't say. By Yomru Anshe Beis Shemesh, the people of Beis Shemesh said, Miyuchal Lama Lufnei Hashem Elokim HaKadosh Hazeh, who's going to be able to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We can't have this Aron Kodesh here, Val Miyala Me'alenu. Who's going to be able to bring it up, right, and bring it to us? What's going to happen over here? What are we going to do with this? Now, they didn't just remove it like the people of the Plishtim did. They wanted to find the right person to take it. Who's going to do it? Vayishchol Malachim al Yoshe Kiris Yarim. So they went to Kiris Yarim, Lamor. Heshibu Plishtim with Aron Hashem. The Plishtim returned the Aron of Hashem. Redu Halu Oso Aleichem. Do you want to take it down to you? Are you willing to go ahead and take it to you guys themselves? Now, this is an interesting break in the Prakim. I have no idea why Perek Zion starts over here. This is a very strange break, but by Avon Shekiris Yarim and Perek Zion Pasuk Aleph, the people of Kiris Yarim came, by Yalu Aron Hashem, and they brought up the Aron Hashem, by Yavolo Sol Beis Avinadav Bagiva, they brought it to Avinadav and Giva, that's Elazar Beno Kidru Lishmor Aron Hashem, and Elazar was dedicated to watch over the Aron of Hashem itself. He would make sure that everything was taken care of, that it would remain ritually clean, etc. Sweep up, take care of all the stuff around it, make sure it was a covetous place, make sure people didn't touch it, make sure people treated it with reverence. He was the guy in charge of everything that he needed to do when it came to that. Plus, he may have brought korbanos, because remember, it's a bama, and a bama, anybody could be makriv. So he may have been the guy who was in charge of being makriv korbanos in front of it as well.
Yeah, but that seems like almost like a pay, like you're giving korbanos to the Aron instead of
you
korbanos.
Can still bring a bama and the
no,
arm.
No, I understand
is there.
You could do that, but
so
it's.
You have to make a different Mizbeach. So you put a different Mizbeach up, and you do it in front of there. But Avinadav was in charge. From the day that it sat in Kiryas Arim, the days became longer. It just went longer and longer. It became 20 years. Bnei Yisrael were united to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning one after the other, right? It was good. They started listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and for this amount of time, 57 years, the Aron was outside of the Mishkan and was left in Nov and Givon. They never brought it back to the Mishkan. And the reason why is, simply put, they were worried. If they brought it back to the Mishkan, maybe you're right. Maybe they didn't deserve to have the Mishkan anymore. They knew they could get the Aron Kodesh, but they weren't told to bring it back to the Mishkan. They waited until Shmuel HaNavi told them, bring it back. Shmuel HaNavi never got a Nebuah about this from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Shmuel HaNavi never brought it back. It never happened after that point, which is a really cool thing. It never was brought back during those 57 years.
But why do you need a Nebuah to do what seems most logical?
Not to bring it back to the Mishkan.
Why is that not logical?
Because we don't know what the Mishkan was at the time. At the time, you could bring Bamos. Maybe that's what the people needed. And the truth is, they were brought back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the times of Shmuel HaNavi because of what he was doing. It could be they needed those bummels, those individual bummels where you didn't have to go to the Mishkan to do something. You could do something in your backyard that may have been something that people were into and people were really happy about it. Like, oh, wow, I could do it right here, meaning I can have my own shul. I don't just have to make aliyah l'regel every time I want to do something. So that changed thought by the people. Yeah, block minyanim, right? A regular block, but really it's like a community shul. They had community shuls. It made things a lot easier for them and went through. It says, Vayomer Shmuel, basically, well, we're not going to, it's not yet, but this is where the parak should end. Avinadav was blessed tremendously by this, and it's really cool where this was. Kiryas Arim, does anybody know what the other name of the city is nowadays?
Telstone.
Telstone. If you go to Neveh, the yeshiva in Telstone, all the way, yeah, if you go all the way up the mountain to the top of the hill, that's where the Aron Kodesh was. It's where the shul is up there where Neveh used to be. Neveh is now a different part of the section right over there. But right up there, when you get all the way up in Telstone, the top of the hill, that's where the Aron Kodesh waited. That's Avinadav's house. And it is... really interesting place. You can see all around it. That's where
do
it was.
Do we know that that's Givon. The exact spot? And it was on a hill across the valley?
No, there's only one hill in Kiryas Yarim.
No, I know. We call it Kiryat Yarim. Did we know that this was Kiryat Yarim all the way straight through since the time?
Yeah, because otherwise you'd have you know, the archaeological diggings around. But yeah, I do think that they
have archaeological digs there?
Yeah, they had them before when they were building. Oh. That's why they can't build in certain parts. Yeah. But Yomer Shmuel Beis Yisrael, Al Kol Beis Yisrael. So Shmuel said to all Bnei Yisrael, Lemur, he said to them, Im b'chol levav kam atoshav min Hashem, if you with all of your heart, you're returning to Hashem, Hasiru es elhei nechor mitokhechem, get rid of the idols that you have from amongst you, v'ashtaros, as well as the ashtaros. Now the ashtaros, remember we talked about the Ba'alim, Baal, was the male masculine god. Asheros was the feminine version of that god. Baal was a masculine version. It looked like a guy and it had man parts to it. Ashtaros was a female god and it had female parts to it. The gods back then by the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, unfortunately, were all used for illicit purposes for Gilui Arayos. And they purposely made it that it would have the parts of a man and a woman. Ashtaros was the feminine part, and that was also a popular god in this part of the world at that time. So it says, get rid of all those things. I'm sorry? Yeah, they still have them. V'alchinu levavchem al Hashem. Prepare yourselves. Get yourselves ready to go back to Hashem. V'ivdu levado and serve him alone. V'yatzos kam yat pelishim. And he's going to save you from the hands of the pelishim. V'yasu b'nei Yisraelos ba'al v'asar shkaros. They got rid of their male idols and their female idols. V'yatzos Hashem levado and they started serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone. Right? Now, there is a lot that has to do with this. Number one, the fact that they were willing to give up their adultery, which they were so into in the Gilui Arayos that was there, which Chazal says only because of Avodah Zarah. The only reason why people went to Avodah Zarah is because of the Gilui Arayos involved. And they served Hashem alone. No one ever denied God's existence as if there was no God on top of all these little idols. They just thought that the idol was a way of getting close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and they were part of Shituf, which means you believed in God and you also believed in these types of idols.
I agree, you don't understand this, but they went to these idols for Gilui Arayos purposes. They could do Gilui Arayos without idols. Why do you need idols to do Gilui Arayos?
It was part of the service of the idol, meaning if you do this in front of it, then it will give you X, Y, and Z.
Right, so then that's already doing Avodah Zarah kind of... I mean, there's a purpose in the Avodah Zarah itself.
Yeah, it was kind of like an excuse to go. Okay. You know, without being graphic. Pasuk Hey, Vayomer Shmuel, Kivtzu al Kol Yisrael Mitzvasa. Shmuel said, gather everybody at Mitzvah. Mitzvah, again, was the place where they always gathered. It's the place where everybody in Bnei Yisrael were always around. It was supposedly, at that time, this is one of the holiest places. Vespalabad Kam El Hashem, I'm going to daven to you for Hashem, to Hashem. Vayikavtzu al Mitzvasa, they all came to Mitzvah. Vayish Avu Mayim, they drew water. Now, the thing behind this is that normally, in order to show people that you really mean it, you do certain things. You do something to make it seem like you're actually involved in something. They took water out of the ground, and it says, "Vayishbechu l'vnei Hashem," they poured it out in front of God. That showed they're willing to give up of themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yatzumu v'yomhu, they fasted that day. V'yomhu Shem chatonu l'Hashem, we sinned to Hashem, v'yishbechu shmol z'bnei Yisrael b'mitzvah. He judged them. Not only did he judge them literally, in which the cases would be brought to him, and he'd judge every single case, he also judged them well in front of the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, these people are good people, don't bother them. Now again, the pouring of the water, there are four different ideas that are brought over here. Rashi says they were pouring out water is a symbolic act of humility. We're nothing in comparison to you. That's number one. Targum Yonason says they poured out their hearts like water. They davened as if they were pouring out their hearts. That's number two. Number three, and this is from the Yamalois itself, the water compares to Torah. They learned while they were inside there. Number four, the Ralbag, they cleansed themselves by doing tshuva as if they were pouring themselves out completely. That's that. Shmuel told
Nobody
them...
says it was Sukkot and they were doing...
No, they don't bring down sukkahs. Not that I saw.
Or maybe they made mikvahs or something.
If they did, it would be weird also, because I think the she'ivas mayim, the pouring of the water, libation of water, is only a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai by the Mishkan of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't think you do it anywhere else. You definitely do it in the Beis HaMikdash, but I don't believe it exists. Nisuch HaMayim is only by Beis HaMikdash. I don't think so. I don't think it exists.
But the, maybe it's a mikvah?
It could have been. Yeah, they could have had that. Zayin. Vayishmu plishim ki yiskabzuk b'nei Yisrael mitzvah. So the plishim heard that b'nei Yisrael gathered a mitzvah, and they had the entire other idea. They were like, oh, b'nei Yisrael gathering together to fight a war. Vayalu sarnei plishim al Yisrael. The officers of plishim came to b'nei Yisrael. Vayishmu b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael heard about it. Vayiru b'nei plishim. They were afraid. After all, they had just been subjugated to them for the last year, two, three, however long it's been. They were scared out of their minds. They lost the previous war. They knew the Aron Kodesh had been taken by them. Granted, they got the Aron back, but they were worried. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that all this happened right now. B'nai Yisrael were also worried because they said, we gathered here, we didn't bring weapons. We only came here in mitzvah in order to make sure that we would daven together, etc. Nobody brought our weapons. We don't have any weapons with us. We're not ready to fight. Do not stop. Don't cease from davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yishinu Yapalishim to save us from the hands of the Plishtim. Vayikach Shmuel Tlei Chalav Echad. Shmuel took a nursing lamb. By Aleu Ola, Kalu Lashem, and he brought it up as an Ola entirely to Hashem. By Yisak Shmuel Lashem, and he screamed out to Hashem. By Adi Yisrael for Bnei Yisrael, by Aneu Hashem. The idea is a suckling lamb is the weakest creature out there. There's nothing else weaker than it, and therefore even this animal it should represent Klal Yisrael. Hashem, we are nothing without you. We can't do anything without you. It's like a bleeding lamb, right? Not bleeding. Bleating lamb that was able to do whatever we can do over here. That's what they said. They said, help us be able to take over here. Now, again, we have a lot of issues because number one, less than 8 days old, you cannot bring a korban. That's usher. You can't bring it as any type of korban. You have to wait till it's 8 days to make sure that it's alive. So number one, this is a rosh shah. That
wait,
he was allowed
well,
to bring
how do you
it
know
like
it's
this.
Less than 8 days old. It just says it's a nursing lamb.
Suckling lamb. I don't know. But apparently,
well, 8 days,
Mitch says,
it suckles for longer than 8 days.
Are we sure? I really don't know.
There's no way. They only nurse for 8 days.
30 days.
Okay, fine. That's 30 over
days.
8 days.
Yeah. But number one, that it was that this animal was less than 8 days old. Number two, it was not only the actual lamb. He sacrificed it with its skin. I mean, he didn't skin the lamb as they normally do, give the skin over to the Kohanim and then put the lamb. He took the entire lamb. 60 days? Well, you know,
then,
we got it better. Yeah, 8 days.
Concise,
8 days
know?
Is that.
3 year-olds got married. You know, they
6 days,
after
done
six
after
days.
7 days. 7 days. The 8th day is already too late. Yeah,
they're already chewing gum.
Number two, they went ahead and they brought it even with the skin. Meaning they brought the entire thing as an ola. Number three, Shmuel brought it. Now that's not such a bad deal because it was a bama. And a bama, even Shmuel and Evi was allowed to bring. He's a Levi, that was okay. But also it's weird because Tlei, the way that it's spelling it, it's a female. And once again, a female shouldn't be brought. But again, it was a bama, so it would be okay. But four things that were a little bit off about this. Vayishmuel, Mila Ola. Shmuel brought up this Ola, Plishim Nikshu L'Mochama B'Yisrael. The Plishim came to wage war with B'nai. So Vayarim Hashem B'Kol Gadol B'Yamahu Ala Plishim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it thunder. There was a huge noise where the Radak says no Jews heard it, but it sounded like thunder and lightning, and the Plishim were scared out of their minds. Vayumim, it confused them, Yinagfu L'Bnei Yisrael, and they were plagued in front of B'nei Yisrael, meaning it was as if flashes of lightning came, crevices opened up in the earth, earthquakes happened, and the Plishim lost their weapons. The Jews picked up the weapons and killed the Plishim right there on the spot, meaning even before the entire Ola was sacrificed, this huge storm came down and confused everybody and destroyed everybody over here. we always say, and I don't know if anybody knows it, remember in the Anenus, I don't know if you say it in the Sephardi world, but what we say at the end of Slichos, Anenu Hashem, Anenu, Anenu, whatever, we say Anenu Anenu Kshanisa L'Shmuel B'Mitzvah, Anenu, answer us like you answered Shmuel in Mitzvah. So what does that mean? This is it. When he cried out loud and asked them to save them from the Plishtim, and they were saved, that's what we're saying. This is Kshanisa Yisrael B'Mitzvah itself. They left Mitzvah, they left Plishtim, they chased after the Plishtim, Yakum, Admitachos Beis Kor, they went all the way to Beis Kor. He took a stone, he put it between Mitzvah and whatever this Shane, this big valley was. And he called it Evan Ezra, Yomar Adhena Azrun Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has helped us all the way until here. And that's where the name Ibn Ezra comes from, right? Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu has helped us. But Yikanu HaPlishim.
Ibn Ezra, that was his name, Avraham Ben Ezra.
Yeah, yeah, but meaning he based it on this. That's why he called himself Ibn Ezra. This is based on this pasuk, Ibn Ezra. By Yikanu HaPlishim, the Plishim were subdued. V'lasu od lavobig vol Yisrael. They no longer came in the borders of Bnei Yisrael. V'ati ad Hashem HaPlishim kol yimei Shmuel. The hand of God was upon the Plishim for all the days of Shmuel. The Plishim were always scared from that point on to get up and do anything. V'ashom na'ir ha'arim asher lachu Plishim eis Yisrael. This is something we don't think about. Such a crazy thing. Whenever the Plishim took over, they took over certain cities and they ruled over those cities. Whenever the Jews took over, they took over those cities again. Meaning it kept changing hands from one place to the other. People would go from one place to the other. These border cities, like the cities that we have nowadays, you wouldn't live there for very long. It was really a scary place to live, right, to be able to be in those places. But all those cities that the Plishim had taken from Bnei Yisrael, they returned to Bnei Yisrael. Yeah, they're still scary. It says, May Ekron Vad Gas Ves Gvulon. Ekron Gas, all the areas around it. Hitzel Yisrael Mea Plishim. Bnei Yisrael saved from the Plishim. Yisholom Bnei Yisrael Bnei Amori. And the Amori, even they were scared. There was Shalom between them. Even they wanted to make peace, says the Radak. They weren't willing to fight. He judged them for all the days of his life. Chazal tell us that he was only Navi, only Shofet, for a total of 13 years. He lived to the age of 52. He was 39 when Shaul HaMelech, when Eli HaKohen had died. So he was only the king, only the judge for those 13 years. And what would he do? What was he well known of? V'halach midei shana b'shana, every year he would go. V'hasavav Beis El, v'agilgol, v'amitzpah. He would go to the big cities, Beis El, Gilgal, Mitzpah. V'shavad Yisrael, v'kol makom was Eila. And he judged Bnei Yisrael in all of those places. Right? Now, here's a little bit of a shiloh. Shmuel HaNavi was promised by his mother that he would serve Bnei Yisrael, he would serve in the Mishkan for all the days of his life. He would spend 50 years in the Mishkan itself. But if he went around judging everybody from place to place to place, then he wasn't serving in the Mishkan. He was a Levi. So why was he allowed to do this? How does this, doesn't this go against his mother's promise?
Two answers, meaning either A, this is part of his circuit, meaning he did his time in the Mishkan and he also went to other cities to do it every year, or since Bamas are all over the place, everywhere he goes, he's in the Mishkan.
It's a klutz kasha. Once the Mishkan was destroyed, there was no longer a chiv behind the neder, and he was allowed to go wherever he was needed, and therefore he went around and did that. Or number two, you could say that the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was his judging, and therefore he didn't have to do it in the Mishkan itself. That possibly is there as well. But either way, it says, Uchuvasar Ramasi used to go back to Ramah, Kisham Beis, that's where his house was. Visham Shafat Yisrael, even Sham Yisbeach Hashem. He judged Bnei Yisrael, and he built him Yisbeach there as well, meaning even in that area itself. Chazal tell us, what do you mean? Kisham Beiso? Kisham Beiso. Is that a weird thing to say? That's where his house was? So the answer is, yeah, it means it that way because wherever Shmuel and Avi went, he took his house with him. The Rambam says, based on that Gemara, it's in Perek Dalid in Pirkei Avos, that it is usur for anybody to take money for Torah learning. It's usur for anybody to do that unless you have a specific Yisachar Zvulin relationship. You can't do it. Why not? Because Shmuel and Avi went ahead and he never took anything from anybody for judging them. He brought his whole house with him. He wouldn't stay at anyone's house. Yeah, he wouldn't take any money. He wouldn't do anything whatsoever. I'm sorry?
That's because he had to be impartial.
Because he had to be impartial. That's 100% true. Not
you
only
don't
that.
Have to be impartial to learn Torah.
Not only that, it is strange because other people did that. And also to bring a proof from Shmuel and Avi, one of the greatest people to have ever lived, then nobody else can do it. It's
why
a very
not?
Strange thing.
We bring
thing.
Proofs from all people. We bring proofs from people who were bad who did things. We learn how
exactly,
to do it.
Exactly. Because we can see that that's why it said. By Shmuel and Avi, though, you're saying Shmuel and Avi did this, therefore everybody has to do it? It's almost an impossibility to not take from other people when it comes down to this. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a very big piece that argues on the Rambam, and he says you can, every raya that the Rambam gave, he gave a raya from Hillel, gave a raya from Shmuel and Avi, and the wording of the Yavetz was exactly this. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, you're bringing proofs from the greatest people that are the Jewish people have ever seen. And those are the people who never took anything from anybody else. Said that's not a proof. Said he didn't like it as a proof itself. But it is, without a question, Shmuel and Avi never took one thing from anybody, not even a donkey from them.
From his parents? Or what
the assumption is that, yes, Chana and Elimelech were very, very wealthy. So most probably he inherited money from his parents. Or else, it's
didn't
the way he may, might have gotten business. A meister. He would have gotten maestros, right?
Get
a meister. And stuff like that. He probably did just this to
people. Yeah. He's entitled to it, but I can give it to any lady. I'm going to give it to you because you're the judge.
No. For Meister Rishon. Not for Truma. Yeah. Right. But Meister Rishon. So it's possible. I don't know, but it could very well be that he had other business as well. It just, yeah, we don't know about it. We have absolutely no idea.
Well, wasn't nowadays that they're public officials, so the government pays the salary of the judges. Was there any taxes that
The Rambam says no. There were no such things as taxes back then in which they paid the chachamim to teach
to teach, but the judge is a servant, is a public servant.
So I would assume yes. I would assume that would be the most likely, but I don't know. I don't know if that's what they did back then. It is interesting, by the way, because the Rambam himself was in Kolel until the age of 30-something, and he only left because his brother lost all of his money, so therefore he got up and he said, all right, I'm a doctor now. Now, if anybody wants to get up at the age of like 35 and just be like, I'm a doctor now, I guess that works. But it is strange. He had a Yisachar's willing relationship with his brother. And that's the reason why he was able to learn as much as he did before he ended up becoming the doctor. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, anybody would want to do that. Like, Gibby, you wouldn't want to be a doctor after you just get up one day? Just be like, I'm a doctor now. I'm good. I'm fine. All right, Parakas.
He must have learned whatever
without a question.
Knowledge
more than, yeah.
Those days.
More than anything else. Vayi kasher zokin Shmuel. Then Shmuel got old. Now, here's a problem. Shmuel did not get old. At this time, he's 50 years old. Now, that might have been old for back then, but Eli, remember, was over 80. Shmuel and Avi was not in the line of what you'd say is a zaken. He's not an old person.
Maybe this
so what happened exactly?
To hit relative to his life, meaning when it was written after he had already died, and when he was 50, it was 2 years before
when
he
was old enough. But that's not his mother shoftim Yisrael. He made his children into shoftim for Yisrael. So Rashi says.
Retirement age is around 50. Meaning the official
30 to 50 is when they serve.
With a Levi duty.
Right, 100%. But the idea over here, Rashi says, is that because we're going to go into the children of Shmuel, and people were going to be upset at what the children of Shmuel did. Not that they did anything really wrong, we'll see, right? But nonetheless, upset at what he did. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want anybody to attribute his lifespan, his short lifespan, to his children's sins. So therefore, he made him look old so that people would forget how old he actually was. They looked at Shmuel and they said, oh, he must be 150 years old. And it helped that he'd been a Navi for 40 years already. So people forgot. They were like, oh, I didn't realize how old he was. He must be much older than I really thought he was. So he looked much older. Chazal say another answer, that really he looked old because something else had happened. When Shaul HaMelech was made king and then had to die 2 years later, Shmuel and Avi said, I do not want Shaul to die in my lifetime. So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu was running into a real problem. David HaMelech was supposed to be king, right? In order for that to happen, Shaul HaMelech had to die. But Shmuel's not letting me do it. So that there's only one way for me to do this. Shmuel has to die before Shaul. But Shmuel looks so young. He's going to die at the age of 52. People are going to be saying horrible things. They're going to say that he was Chayiv Karis. So he made Shmuel look old. This is the Gemara. He made Shmuel look old so that people forgot how old he was. So he died. And then Shaul could die so that David HaMelech could become king. That's a really amazing medrash, but that's what ended up happening over here. Okay, also, simply put, the Ralbag says, his constant traveling aged him. Simply put, you're traveling all the time from place to place to place for 3, 4, 5 years, that ages you. That takes a lot out of you. Vishem bino b'chor Yoel. His oldest son was Yoel, Shemishneo Avia. The second son was Avia, Shoftim be'er Sheva. They were judges in Be'er Sheva. Now, it's interesting, this is not their real names. Yoel's real name is Vishne. That's what he's known as in Divrei Yamim. The reason why he's called that is because Yoel does tshuva. He becomes Yoel the Navi that we see in the Trei Aser, who prophesies about the crazy famine that was going on in his time.
Didn't Yoel live much later?
No, there's no proof when Yoel lived. We have no idea. So this may very well be that the famine is talking about the famine during David HaMelech's time. The famine that he refers to in the Navi Yoel may be the famine of David HaMelech that we'll see a few years later.
Pretty damning things about him. That's
possible. Oh, yeah, hold on. So Vishne is that he changed his ways. And that's why we call that he was Mishana his ways, that he did something bad and he did something else. Shmuel was known as Petuel. because he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that it refers to. Aviyah has another word, again, Mishnehu. The idea of Mishnehu over here also means Shana, that he changed his ways as well, even though he did something wrong over here.
It literally means Yol was the main one, and his
correct.
Number two.
Yeah, his number two was Aviyah. V'lohokul bana bedrachav. His sons did not go in his ways, in the ways of Shmuel and Avi. Now, again, to be able to say this, this is like, I don't even want to say such a thing. You never want to say something. A gadol be Yisrael, like when it, think of the gadolei ador, his son is not like him. He's a gadol ador. It's difficult for anybody to be like their father when they're that great.
Yeah, but then it goes on. It doesn't say they didn't go
Agreed. But meaning the wording of Elohu Chobana B'drachav, that his sons didn't go in his ways, is not that bad. And from here, the Gemara in Shabbos Nunheim Abayz Darshans, that Kola Omer B'nei Shmuel Chatu, anybody who says that B'nei Shmuel actually sinned, Eino Latoa, has made a mistake. It says, Elohu Chobana B'drachav, they didn't go in his ways, but they weren't evil. So the wording is, Vayitu achorei abatza. They strayed after prophets. Vayikhu shochad, and they took bribes. Vayatu mishpat, and they turned around judgment. Now, Shmuel and Avi went from city to city to judge people. His sons instead stayed in Beersheba. Why? Because they didn't, what ended up happening is people had to travel to them. When people travel to you, there's an expense involved. People didn't want to go to court anymore because they were like, oh, look, why should we go to court? It's going to cost us money to get there. And even when they went there, they charged them money. Not that they charged the money for themselves so that they could sway. They took equal amounts from each person. They wouldn't do something that's over from the Torah. But what they did was they took money to be able to pay all the people that were around them to incur the expenses of rendering a judgment. That's what they ended up doing. Because this was different from Shmuel and Avi, they were said as if they took profits. We saw the same thing with the B'nai Eli, saw the same thing with Reuven, we saw the same thing with Yehuda, that each one of them, it's a different thing over here. There is a little bit of a fault. Some say that there were advantages that they took. Unfortunately, the advantages were a profit, that once they judged the people, they finished their judgment, and then they went to them and said, hey, can we do business with you? And they made business propositions with the people that they then judged. So that would be a bribe that they took. And that's usher. You are not allowed to do that. But according to the Gemara, it was never a straight-out bribe. It was never a straight-out shochad that they took money from somebody in order to judge him improperly. That never happened. But they went through it. Yeah.
Going back to the Loha Chobana Vizrachav.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean if somebody says they went in his path, doesn't necessarily mean they reached the lofty heights of their father. It just means they follow the path that he...
After
so,
going through what Shmuel did.
But to say they didn't follow the path means they kind of... They went all the way off.
Again, hold on.
I'm saying that...
If we just said what Shmuel did, right? And now we're going through what his sons did.
Right.
The answer is, v'lo holchu b'drachav, b'ana b'drachav. Meaning they didn't go in his ways. They didn't go in the great lofty ways of their father.
No, but it's that's the idea. They didn't reach his. They would have said if that's the point. Is saying it would say they didn't reach their father's level. What is it?
The Gemara darshans it this way. So
all right,
I think that's a better drush than saying it any other way.
It's,
if the Gemara darshans that
not
way.
A shot. That's
I think that still works in shot. Okay. Yeah, but iskabzu kol ziknei Yisrael. But then they all gathered together all the ziknei Yisrael. They have all Shmuel and Ramah. So they came to Shmuel and Avi and Ramah. By Yom Rei Lavan, they said to me, "Ata zakanti, you're older. Ubanechal ohol v'drachacha. Your kids are not going in your ways. Ata simelanu melech l'shaftin." Make for us a king to judge us like all the other nations of the world. Now, halachically, you are supposed to make a king. In Parshas Shoftim, it says, ki tavo, I forgot what the wording is actually, but the wording is ki, but the answer is, som tasim alach amalach, you may make a king. And it's a mitzvah seh midioraisa to make a king. It is an actual mitzvah seh. So what was the problem with what the people said? So the wording as, could you grab a chumash for me really quickly? That wasn't, it's funny, that is an issue, but it wasn't the main issue. Any chumash? It's okay, it's right here. The wording in the pasuk, when we talk about making a king, it's in Shoftim, and it's right in, toward the end. I don't remember if it's Parak Chaf or Parak Yud Tes. It must be Parak Yud Tes. But when it says, making a king, that's Mavir Bino Bito La Malik. Here we go. It's right here. You'll say the following. Asima alai melech. Look at the wording. Alai. What does the word alai mean? Ayin lamed yud? Upon me. The wording that they used? Lanu. The Kliyakar immediately points out. Lanu means give us a king. Give him to us that we decide and he follows suit. Alai means put him upon us so that he's in charge and he does everything instead. So that's problem number one. They wanted a king that would be under their control, but they should have asked for a king that would be that they would be under his control. Number two, all it says is Asimo Aimelech Kechol Agayim Asher Svivosai. So they do say, like, all the nations that are around us. Here they say, Lishaftenu, a king should not be a judge. A king can judge if he knows halacha, but that's not his. That's not what he's supposed to do. A shofet, he judges, because that's supposed to be a high spiritual level. But a king is not supposed to do that. That's not what he's supposed to do. That's number two. Problem number two, they said, Lishaftenu. Problem number three, they said, Kecho Agoyim Asher Svivo Soy in the Pasuk. Over here, they just said, Kecho Agoyim, we want to be like the other nations. Meaning, there's one thing to be able to be like the other nations. There's another thing to be Kecho Svivo Soy. When they meant Kecho Svivo Soy, it means we see something good about them. We want to copy, we want to emulate that. That's okay if they see something good. Here they're saying, we just want to be like the other nations of the world. We want to copy what they're doing. We don't know what they're doing, but we want to be like them. We want to be known just like any other nation. And that's a problem.
Your first point, yeah, with the Lassim Alai, Malachim Simlanu. So that, I mean, that makes sense when Shmuel is appointing the king. I mean, yeah, we don't know the future, but at this point, how do they, like, does it really, do we want to have his great-great-grandchildren who might not be the same type of person that Shmuel anoints, whether it's David HaMelech or Shaul HaMelech?
Well, he's going to tell them the rules. He's going to give them the rules. They're going to have to hear it.
Right, but then, but if the rules are, you always have to listen to the king.
Well, let's see. Hold on. Well, we haven't gotten there yet. Pasuk Vav. Vayera Davar Veini Shmuel. Shmuel was very, he was very upset. Kasher Amru Tna Lanu Melech L'Shaftenu. And look at that. You see the words? Because they said, give us, the word Lanu, a king, Lishaftenu. He was not upset about them saying Kichol Agoyim Asher Svivo Soy. That was not the real issue. It was the issue of Lanu and Lishaftenu. But he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he asked, what exactly should we be doing over here? What should I get around? Now, it says, Vayomer Hashem El Shmuel, Shema B'kol Ha'ama L'chol Asher Yomro Elecha. Listen to the voice of the nation and everything they tell you. Ki Lo'os Chama Asu. It's not you that they despise. They want you as a leader, Shmuel. They just don't want you as the king. They want you to lead them spiritually. They want you to be the guy who's helping them as their Navi. That's not what they're asking for. They're not asking for a king to get rid of you. They don't want me as king. Until now, me as king meant I take myself out of it. They need a king that's going to be together with them, and that's that. So what should they have done? What should they have done over here? So the way the Rav Hirsch and Radak says it is they should have asked for someone to inspire them, to lead them, and set an example of unselfish behavior. That's the way that Rav Hirsch puts it. They didn't. Now they want to be like all the other nations, to imitate them and worship their idols, etc. And that's the problem over here. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that was the wrong thing.
Why does somebody want a dictator?
I think what they wanted was a leader that they could mamish trust and believe in. They wanted somebody that they could listen to and go at all times, and I think they wanted the hereditariness. Meaning, granted, you don't always want the son of the king to be there, but they wanted something. Every time they're looking at Eli, his kids didn't make it. They looked at Shmuel, his kids didn't make it. They said, well, let's make a family where the family is responsible for us. I'm sorry? Quiz direction.
Yeah, but yeah, we see that the kids of all their leaders aren't good, so why do they want to give somebody where the requirement, the only requirement to be king is you're the son of the previous
king? Yeah, it is a little bit difficult, but I think their thought process was, and this can work, is that they should be held to a higher standard, that they should be higher people, they should be a better people, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu would know if there's a right person here, maybe there's somebody.
The leader stature would be that of a king as opposed to that of a shofet.
And without a question, they knew the Torah. They knew that the king was able to be asked for, and they probably thought that this is the next level for a messianic, you know, type of world. Maybe this will lead us to the next thing. And who knows what would have been had Shaul HaMelech been great or David HaMelech, you know, followed everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Who knows? But there was something that they wanted over here and they wanted that. It is interesting also. Democratic would have been interesting. It could very well be also that they didn't want the form of Hashkacha Pratis that Hashem had with them until now. They now wanted something with a real army. Look, every war that they were fighting until now was a little bit weird because they kept relying on miracles. It was just like they went out to war, like the war that they just fought against the Plishtim. They had no weapons. You can imagine the people got home and they were like, we won again. Crazy. But we didn't prepare ourselves. We didn't have a regular army. We didn't have anything. So we want a king to be able to put together a real army with the real stuff. We wanted something like that. We wanted something that's organized. Maybe that's the idea behind it, but that's that. But again, Shmuel and Avi would continue to be the moral authority. They were not asking for Shmuel and Avi to die. They were asking for Shmuel and Avi to be the moral authority while someone else leads them in battle. Everything that they did from the day that they brought, that I brought them up from Mitzrayim until today, and they forsook me and they served other gods. That's what they're doing over here as well. They're doing that to you as well. Now, granted, they did want a judgment that's going to be a little bit different. Maybe Shmuel and Avi was upsetting them with how stark he was in the Torah law. And maybe they felt that somebody else could judge them a little bit better with shtara parsoy, as they call it.
Because he tried to install his kids, and they're like, your kids aren't cutting it, and you're obviously retiring soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so we need somebody else to go around. Yeah. You know what's funny, by the way? It is interesting, just ironically, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Shmuel look old. Why? Because he was worried about what was going to happen with Shaul HaMelech later on, so he made him look old so people would forget. Because he looked old, the people are like, you're old, we're worried about your kids taking over, and that's when they asked for a king. So isn't that interesting?
How it's,
sort of like circular. Right. The only reason why they made a king is because Shmuel looked old. But the only reason why Shmuel looked old was so that Shaul HaMelech would die after 2 years. So it's weird, because if Shmuel wouldn't look old and he would continue to do what he was doing, there wouldn't have been any issues, and they wouldn't have made Shaul HaMelech into a king.
Shmuel's top kid in the world, because his mother got it for like 50 years. He's going to be for Hashem, and then after that,
something's going to be different. But they didn't know. Did they all know about the 50 years? Maybe some of them knew. I just find it's an interesting thing. I've never seen an answer. I've never seen anything like it, but it is a weird sort of, okay, but that's that. Pazik Tats, Vato Shema B'Kolom. We only have like 5 minutes left, so we'll finish this off. Vato Shema B'Kolom. Listen to the voice, Akia Eito Yidbaim, but warn them. Tell them the mishpat of a king, Asher Yimloch Aleihem, who's going to rule over them, and that's that. Now, we all know, where is a king supposed to come from? From what Shevet? Shevet Yehuda. We all know that. Obviously, everybody was looking toward Yehuda, and they were expecting a king to be from Shevet Yehuda. Okay, that's what they were all expecting, and makes the most sense over there.
Malachim made Tzumimecha in the bracha, right? Isn't that the bracha too?
That what?
Doesn't
Yaakov say Yaakov Vinu did say
kings plural will come from Shevet Binyamin.
From Shevet, Binyamin itself. And there's no question, but that could be through the mother, right? If Yehuda was supposed to be the real Shevet emotional in Bnei Yisrael. But because they asked for this badly, the king that they were going to get was going to be temporary. And that was an idea that Shmuel and Avi instilled from the beginning. And he made sure people knew, this is going to be a temporary king. Now, if this temporary king does really well, he's going to keep a position in Klal Yisrael. There will always be a Mashiach ben Yosef in Klal Yisrael. That type of Mashiach that will be there. But meaning a Mashiach ben Yosef type, like whatever Mashiach ben Yosef represents. A leader who's going to take care of things that the other leader won't be able to do. There will always be something. There will always be the prime minister to the president, whatever you want to call it. There will be somebody. But it was always going to be this way because of what happened over here.
But wasn't it because Shaul screwed up? He didn't kill all of Amalek.
And if Shaul HaMelech wouldn't have messed up, he still would have remained in power, even though David HaMelech was going to be the ultimate king. David HaMelech was always going to be king. That wasn't Akasha. After all, think about it. Shaul HaMelech is made king, right? David HaMelech is made king a year and a half later.
But that was after
so at the time, right, at the time, he was 28 and a half. It's not like he wasn't ready to be king yet. That David HaMelech, he could have been made king right then. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Davidic line to start right then, we don't know, but older than Shmuel and Avi. He had a son who was 40 years old. So how old, Yonatan was at least 40, because we see the age later on. So how old was he? He was probably around 55, 56, maybe even 60, 65. And you know it sounds strange, because Shaul is called a nar, a young lad, and it seems like Shmuel and Avi is so much older than Shaul, but it's not. Shaul HaMelech, without a question, is older, because he had a 40-year-old kid. At least 40. So there's no question that he has been older. We'll see. We're going
to
see the ages later on. What?
Shmuel was referred to a Nar also.
Shmuel and Avi was called a Nar. But that and we don't know what that meant either, right? We said it could have been later on when he was 30, 40. Because he was a servant.
Maybe Shmuel was Shmuel's Nar.
We're going to see. Well, no, not at the time. The word Nar is going to appear. But I'm sorry? Could be looked young, but he was 60.
I just want you to know,
like 60 years old. Yeah, it could be. It very well could be. Very well could be. There's no question, because we use the word nar all over the place. Eliezer is called a nar. We have the word nar even though they're old. But let's finish off. We have like 3 minutes. Vayomer Shmuel es kol divrei Hashem ala Am. Shmuel told all the words of Hashem to the people. Hashuah lemi to Amelech, who asked for him from a king itself. Now, it is interesting. He says it over to the not to the Zekanim. He tells it over to the people. He goes to the rabble. And he says to them, look, I know you guys want a king. I want you to understand what this king is going to do. This is the practice of the king who's going to rule over you and your children. Rule over you. He can take your kids. If he wants to take your kids away, he can take some little bit and put it in his chariots. Or his soldiers, and run in front of his chariot. He can do anything. Now, Rabbi Yossi says in Sanhedrin Chaf Amud Beis, he is entitled to do this. But he doesn't have to. Rabbi Yehuda says this is only to frighten them, but not that he's actually allowed to do this unless he pays them. The Rambam passes halacha that the king is allowed to take anyone from Klal Yisrael and inscript them into his army, but he must give them some form of payment. They have to be paid in some way.
Pay with money, so it goes through. He feeds them. I mean, you have to feed your soldiers or they're not going
to
fight for you.
You have to be able to, no, not just feed, meaning you have to do something for them. Meaning if they're in the army, then yeah, you got to feed them and give them shelter or whatever it is. If they're in your chariot or whatever it is, then you have to give them some form of pay. They can't do it for free. They have to appoint officers of thousands, officers of fifties. Well, somebody's going to have to plow the king's fields, liktor k'tziro, to reap his harvest, and to make weapons of war, as well as the instruments for his chariots. He could also take your daughter's yikach. Lirakachos, you can make them perfumers, latabachos, and cooks, ulaopos, and bakers, obviously,
oh, interesting.
Concubines, no, and wives.
But it's interesting, it doesn't say that. He just says to work for him, not to take him.
You are 100% right. You know, halachically speaking,
he'd be like, he'll take them for whatever he wants.
Right. Halachically speaking, the Rambam holds appointing women in the palace to be cooks and whatever it is without them being concubines is usur. You can't just have them be single women in the kingdom, and the reason why is because of Arias. Because they're going to do whatever they want to do. There's a lot of men around. There's a lot of women around. That's not a safe place to be able to have everyone together. So if you're going to take them, as that says the Rambam, they have to be some form of a concubine, of a pilegesh, or the wives of the kings themselves. But it means you can take them in. You can take your fields, your vineyards, your olive groves, and things like that. You can take it, and he can give it to his servants. Now, the Rambam holds, he has to pay for it. He has to pay for it, but he's allowed to pay the least amount of price and just take it from you and be able to do that. That is something that he's allowed to do as long as he does everything. However, he can force it as well. If he needs to make a path, he is allowed to destroy your field, pay you the least amount possible for it.
What does that mean, least amount possible? Here's a dollar.
The lowest amount that it would be worth. Meaning, if it's whatever, even if it's an idiot's field, he could pay for a Ziburis field. Right? I'm sorry? Yeah, basically. And he can go ahead and do that and
under
go through.
Taking laws, the government has to pay fair market value.
Do you know the funny story? There's a really funny story. Highway, the Begin Highway,
yeah.
Highway 1 in Yerushalayim. So when Ehud Olmert was mayor, he really wanted to get it finished while he was still, mayor of Yerushalayim. He wanted to get it finished while he was still mayor of Yerushalayim. He had another 2 years or whatever it was. So he really wanted to get it finished. So they did all the land, did everything, etc. And one of the people in the office messed up. They didn't look up who the land belonged to, and one of the pieces of land was never bought by the government. So the government made the entire highway, finished everything, was all done, and a week before they were going to have the grand opening of Begin, the guy came up and said, "You never bought my land." And he showed the contract. He said, "You built on my land, you never bought it."
So they have to buy it now.
So they had to buy it at a crazy price, and it cost the taxpayers, because it's not a king. This is a taxpayer. So he said, "I want to sell it for whatever it was, and you already messed it over by going there, and I wouldn't have, if you would have taken it before." He took him to court, and it had to be within a week itself, and he got triple market value for that piece of land, and it made all the papers. Every single paper got it, and it was famous. It was that when I was back in Eretz Yisrael, I remember it being there. It was 2002, 2003. I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was absolutely amazing. And we'll end with this one over here. Vizarechem, the karmechem, your seeds, your vineyards, yasor. He can take a tenth. He can give it to his ministers, his officers, his servants, your servants, your maids, your bachurim, and your donkeys, he can take them, he can use it for all of his work, right? And he can do whatever it wants. It's sonchem yasor, he could take a tenth of your sheep, and you will be his servants. And that's the taxes themselves. The Rambam says all the people are able to be taxed and levied for whatever they have in order for this to happen. It's unfortunate. Good kings, yeah, it'll be okay. You don't have to worry about anything. Bad kings, you can imagine how this ended. You can imagine what this was for them. All right, we'll stop with that.